Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. And joining me in studio today is our radio producer, Jonathan Field. Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning.
And also joining us, my co-host and chairman of our advisory board, Ron Bachman. Ron, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Looking for a good program here. This is going to be an exciting day.
And Ron is coming to us from the Gulf Shores down in Florida. Nice to have him with us today. Yeah, we got a great program today. We're gonna, it's a jam-packed program. In fact, we got three guests joining us today. Our first guest will be Dr. Gary Foster, who is the Chief Scientific Officer with Weight Watchers, and he's going to be talking to us about the importance of employers really understanding, identifying pre-diabetes in their employee population, why that is so important, and then we'll kind of switch it and talk about Rx benefits. We've got Jeff Poulter, Senior Vice President with Magellan Rx Management, who will be with us at IHC Forum coming up in Atlanta. So he's going to really talk about Rx benefits. And then John Park will be the final guest, Chief Strategy Officer with Allegis, one of the leaders in CDHC administration, and really talking about, where we are with consumer healthcare from their perspective. And, John's been in this industry a long time. It goes all the way back to Definity days. He's been a regular speaker with us in the past. So got three great guests, three great different angles all around, healthcare consumerism. But before we kind of get into the meat here on our first segment, we want to take a minute to really recognize our show sponsor, Jonathan.
Yeah.
So, before we get into this morning's show, we'd like to take a minute to recognize them. And, if you'll be attending Forum this year, you can join AFLAC in Session 103 on Wednesday, May 24th, for a discussion on evaluating the value of voluntary benefits as essential benefits. You register now at IHC Forum, theihcforum.com, and be sure to select Session 103 for your Track 1 workshop.
Yeah, and, whether or not you can make it to Forum later this month, we hope to see you down there. But the workshop at Forum is just one part of a thought leadership series that we're doing with AFLAC. It will continue here on Healthcare Consumerism Radio, so keep an eye out for our show schedule, for our Twitter updates, et cetera. And, we're going to be talking a little bit about the changing landscape for voluntary benefits and what employers and the brokers that support them need to know about these changes. The changing landscape today, we talk about it all the time. According to the AFLAC Workforces Report, employees that are enrolled in voluntary benefits are generally more satisfied with their place of employment. Employers are rethinking their overall voluntary benefit strategy in the context of today's environment.
Yeah, and I think, one of the essences of what AFLAC's message is that while it is voluntary because you're choosing your benefits, is that, voluntary benefits are actually becoming core benefits or essential benefits, to their term. And I read a report this morning that employers now are understanding that better, as well as the employees, embrace. I think employees embraced it first, and now employers are really understanding and valuing it. So, again, follow us over the next, several weeks, to Jonathan's point, where AFLAC will be with us. Certainly you can join them in the Session 103 at IHC Forum and Expo in at Atlanta, which is a nice segue. Ron, we got our big event coming up here soon in a couple weeks.
We do. It's going to be very exciting to have all the different opportunities for people to see new ideas and new thoughts, network around, find out what's working, what's not working. And I think the program today even highlights that. There's so many different aspects of the healthcare consumerism. AFLAC being a sponsor here and supplemental benefits are becoming more mainstream as employees have more choices and options that employers are granting them through whether it's private networks that offer up a defined contribution kind of an approach where people can pick more of their own benefits, or whether it's some of the other speakers we've got here today from Weight Watchers to Magellan Rx. it just shows the wide variety and the different directions that consumerism is taking. It's more choices, it's more options, it's more convenience, it's all those different things. And I think the forum just highlights all that by bringing it together and allowing people to come and hear it firsthand and network and find out more about what's really going on in the marketplace, because it's moving so fast in so many different directions. This is a great opportunity for people to come in May. So if they haven't already signed up, it's a good opportunity for them now to go ahead and schedule the time, because it's only a few weeks away from now.
Ken, you've got two interesting sessions that you're leading. That one that you developed, really, our certification course, and then the other is your advanced healthcare consumerism workshop.
Yeah, I always really enjoy, I guess I'm a frustrated teacher in a lot of ways, but I really enjoy the pre-con. We can really sit and go through in a lot of detail the background on healthcare consumerism, basic principles, strategies. We can talk about specific cases that each of the participants brings in. We can spend time delving into the model that we've talked about for a good while, five generations of healthcare consumerism, where we are, where we've been, and sort of where we're going. Gives people new ideas and strategies, gives them a chance to look at the market of healthcare consumerism from different perspectives. That's always fun. It's a four-hour session, which sounds like a long time, but everybody who goes through it says, listen, I didn't think it was very long, and it went so fast, I really want more. So one of the comments we always get is, why don't you do more? So last year, we set up a workshop where we can do sort of an advanced course and focus on the later generations and the leading-edge ideas and thoughts that have been coming out. And then we can also talk about very specific issues that employers would bring to the table and say, well, I've tried this. You know, how does that fit into this concept or this model, or what should I do next? And we can work as a group through some of these issues. So we had a very successful class last year, and I'm really pleased that we're able to find a way to put that in again this year. And I understand there's quite a heavy enrollment for it already. So I have fun with those classes, and I think a lot of people learn a lot as well. And I learn a lot from them, quite honestly. They bring ideas that are very helpful, so it's a very interactive class, and I invite people to come out and participate in that workshop.
Yeah, I think this year's forum, Jonathan, you can comment here too, we've got a quality group of employers on our speaking agenda. So if you're an employer out there and you want to really sit and listen and learn, you know, not just from the innovators, but from people like yourself getting it done, you're going to be able to listen and learn from a lot of different employer speakers. Right, Jonathan? We got it in our program.
Yeah, that's right. You know, of course, we have a partnership with the Atlanta Wellness Professionals, leading wellness directors, benefits managers, et cetera, from some of the largest employers in the metro Atlanta area. And through our partnership with them, we'll be opening up the conference with the general session led by Elizabeth Dixon at Chick-fil-A, and talking all about their experiences in wellness, implementation, employee reception, best practices. So that's a great way to kick off the show this year.
And they'll be talking about what's next, too, I think. What are they looking at? You know, what
strategies down the road. And, you know, as a follow-up to that, we're going to have the opening general session, and everybody's going to head to their first, workshop track. So workshop 101, if you want more of that wellness discussion from your employer peers, go ahead and register, select workshop 101. I think we already have about 70 people in that, so we're going to have to shut that one down. It's so popular.
I think that says a lot, too. It says a lot. And what we're trying to do across all our events, not just this forum in Atlanta, but looking ahead to Baltimore Private Exchange Forum in West, is really, you know, showcase more employers. Because at the end of the day, that's what people want to hear. They want to hear what their peers are doing.
Yeah, and, you know, as you mentioned, employers throughout the program, of course, we have Margaret at Midwest Business Group on health. We have benefits professionals from Zurich, North America, ConAgra, Metro Nashville Public Schools, which will be an interesting, government employer. And then throughout the program, we have various case studies on, you know, everything from employee well-being to we have a session on wearables with several employers on it. So a lot of employers.
We got Jonathan So with the Detroit regional commission,
yeah,
bringing in Western Union.
Western Union.
Really unique case study there.
And we have, you know, Margie Rodino, of course, with Sloan Valve, one of our, she's been with us several times before, so.
But also, it's not just about the employer. I mean, that's the primary group that we're trying to emphasize more, because everyone wants to know what employer and their employees are doing. We also have some quality health plan speakers and panels. We've got quality brokers joining us to speak with us. Also, you know, leaders like Jody Brainer, that's leading our millennial panel and being an expert moderator, one of, you know, top producers here in the Atlanta market. You know, we've got quality innovators, you know, speaking. So, again, it's not too late to join us. Go to www.theihccforum.com. But now we'd like to welcome our first guest on the program. We're glad he could spend some time with us today, Dr. Gary Foster, who's Chief Scientific Officer with Weight Watchers. Gary, good morning to you.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you with us, and we appreciate you spending the time. I think everyone knows the brand Weight Watchers, Gary, but they might not know what you're doing around the employer segment and for employers and employees. Talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into diabetes prevention, if you would, please.
Sure. We have a big portion of our business called our health solutions business that actually offers a B2B component to our Weight Watchers services. So these are arrangements where either through employers or through healthcare plans, we offer our services, usually at discounted rates and typically with subsidies from employers, to make Weight Watchers available. And that comes in a variety of different ways. It could be done by meetings at work. It could be done with our online product, or it could also be done by having employees go to meetings in the community.
That's great. Why should employers be concerned about, diabetes prevention, but specifically identifying pre-diabetes conditions?
Well, it's hard to imagine a condition that's more costly, both in terms of the medical and psychosocial costs that is experienced by employees, but also the cost to employers. If you look at whatever metrics you want to use, direct cost, indirect cost, presenteeism, absenteeism, medical claims, all of those things are significantly higher, not just in folks who suffer from obesity, but exponentially high in folks who suffer from diabetes. So the way we view this from an economic point of view is that if we can simultaneously address the problems of obesity and also prevent an extremely costly condition like diabetes, we provide a real value for both employees and employers.
Now, you did a study recently with Indiana University, is that correct?
Yeah, a little context first. One is that it's been well established for almost 20 years now in studies all around the globe that a modest amount of weight loss, about 5%, in the first 6 months actually prevents diabetes dramatically. It reduced the risk of getting diabetes. If you have prediabetes, a small modest weight loss of 5% will decrease the risk of you getting diabetes by nearly 60%. And that persists at 4 years, and there's recent data that it persists as long as 10 years. So short story is a little bit of weight loss goes a long way. And we know at Weight Watchers we have numerous randomized trials that suggest we can get that magnitude of weight loss. But where this study is different, we actually selected people whom we knew had the diagnosis of prediabetes. So though, given that there's 83 million people in the country who have prediabetes, we assume a lot of our current members have the condition, but this was a study that definitively tested what's the efficacy of the Weight Watchers program in those who already have prediabetes. And the results were impressive. We got both clinically significant reductions in weight and blood sugar control at both 6 months and 12 months, and the amount of weight loss approximated 6% at 6 months, fully maintained at 12 months. And that was accompanied by significant improvements in blood sugar control. And what's notable about that scientifically is you would expect people with prediabetes, as they go on the eventual path to diabetes, their blood sugar control would get worse over time. So had we kept it stable, that would be a public health victory. But actually, the blood sugar control improved over time, So this is literally, we're bending the curve in the opposite direction. So we're really excited about those findings, and they were published just this month in the American Journal of Public Health.
No, that's great. Ron, I'm sure you have a follow-up for him.
Yeah, guys, Ron Bachman, how are you doing today?
Good, Ron, how are you?
I'm doing great. Listen, this is exciting to me because it kind of shows the different directions that consumerism is taking with Weight Watchers getting involved in these kinds of programs and maybe spreading the word around so people are really understanding that you have an employer engagement solution. Some call that sort of an enterprise opportunity, getting employers involved with Weight Watchers. It also tells me that this whole idea of moving from some would call wellness to well-being, that you're talking about the whole person and not just while they're at work, but while they're at home with diet and exercise and things like this. Tell me how it's being accepted by the employer marketplace, and what kind of growth are you seeing, and what are some of the issues that you might have to overcome in reaching out to employers to help support the Weight Watchers programs that you've got going on here?
Yeah, I think in short it's been received very well by employers, and one of the reasons for that is that we're a company that's not only grounded in science but in consumer insights, and whether that consumer is in the B2C space or in the employer space, we're very intent on listening. And one of the things we hear across both sectors is that employees and employers don't want to just hire a unitary solution. So we can clearly deliver on weight loss, but is weight loss enough? Consumers, employers, both want, what about fitness? What about overall eating healthily or eating in a healthy way that's independent of body weight? So our new program is based on that. It's called Beyond the Scale. And to your point about the broader person, it has a food part for sure. It has a fitness part for sure. But we've also introduced last December a fulfillment part. And that allows people to view this process of self-improvement in a very broad, contextual, holistic way. So we're asking people to think about ways they can take care of themselves that don't involve food. Can we teach them non-food coping strategies? And to your point, that pays off not just in the workplace, right? You're not distracted at work because at 3 o'clock you're stressed out and searching for a snack. We've taught people techniques that can take 30 seconds, can take 1 minute, that can calm themselves in the moment or make them more aware. In terms of the growth, we're seeing nice growth in that business, consistent with the trends that we're seeing in other parts of the business. And I think partly it's because of this broad contextual view where employers are feeling, I can hire Weight Watchers, again, not just for weight loss, but for a broad variety of things that are important to me as an employer, but also critically important to employees. We have a very well accepted consumer brand, so employers react better to joining the Weight Watchers program, especially in this broader context, than they would to the ABC program, which doesn't have the same brand recognition. In terms of our challenges, I think it's from where we could do better. Is jointly working with employers to drive engagement. And we have a list of best practices, and we see around engagement. And they include working from the top, having the CEO, for example, doing a video, viewing weight management as part of a broader health initiative. So that involves what kind of foods are available in the cafeteria, what kind of opportunities are to be physically active during the day, in ways that might take 1 minute or might be more allocated in different ways, incentives that would drive engagement. So we're pleased with our overall engagement rates, but we can see they can change two or threefold with the inclusion of these best practices. So that's an area we're focusing on at the moment in collaboration with our employer clients.
Gary, I would make an assumption on engagement, which is a big problem out there, that your experience, your B2C experience helps a lot there too. Your consumer experience helps a lot going back up and helping employers with this engagement. I mean, because that's a big need now, people that really understand how to communicate with that consumer and your brand recognition.
Yeah, they're really key. I think both. The brand recognition, I think, is well known and accepted and endorsed favorably by employees in the general B2C segment. What we can do in the employer setting is to leverage our consumer insights and, frankly, behavioral science around consumer engagement. There are definitely ways to drive consumer engagement, and that's largely our business, right? We want to not just have people come and sign up for some 8-week or 12-week or 16-week program. We want to engage them over time because obesity is a chronic condition, diabetes, chronic conditions, and just treating them in some acute fixed time interval is not going to have long-term efficacy. And we do different things. We, for example, on our app this year, this past December, just launched a site called Connect, which think about it as a Facebook, Instagram, but a safe place for people who won't get criticized based on their weight or based on their struggles with weight. It's just caught on like wildfire. And there's something about getting people together who have a similarity of purpose and shared experience. And if you look at the posts there are things about, yeah, I had a tough day with my weight, but they also go into other things. I've had a tough day at work. I've had a tough day with my spouse. This isn't psychotherapy by any means, but it's a way that people can share the when life gets in the way. And we know that can be a big stumbling block for employees as they try to create a healthier lifestyle. So we're really happy that this is being engaged in so much and at a pretty significant level. So it's not just here's a picture, here's a comment, and somebody does a like. That certainly happens, but some of our most popular ones have thousands of comments, not just likes. So it's a very sticky way, and it's just one example of how we're getting consumer engagement and continuing to drive that based on technology and based on behavioral science. We know that social support drives outcomes.
You know, as we look at the employer market, you know, we've got a conference coming up in a couple of weeks here in Atlanta. We've got a big wellness footprint at this event, you know, covering a lot of things from this piece to, you know, innovation taking place, digital health, mindfulness, et cetera. And you know, we've got employers leaning forward and looking at ways to do it better. So can you talk specifically about, you know, your message for employers and what you're doing to help them really understand, you know, how, you know, diabetes prevention and wellness programs really link directly to increased productivity with their workforce?
Yeah, I think they do in a variety of ways. One is just pure cost on that side. So again, the data are very clear that people who suffer from obesity and from diabetes have stepwise increases in medical costs. They also have stepwise decreases in productivity and in presenteeism. So the data are very compelling and have been around for decades. And I think our approach has been, if we can look at those two medical conditions, that is obesity and diabetes, and make a difference there, that's going to increase the quality of the member of the employee's experience or life, and it can also then lead to productivity and then ultimately healthcare claim costs. I think the other thing where we provide value in terms of the productivity and the softer measures around employee satisfaction is this broader approach. So if for lack of a better word, if employers are just hiring Weight Watchers to deliver weight loss, you know, it's still a slam dunk in terms of the increases you'll get productivity, decreases in absenteeism, and decreased healthcare costs. But if we can also, to your point about mindfulness, if we can teach people skills, and this isn't like an optional part of our program, it's a way that's woven into the program and the consumers are reacting very nicely to, ways to be mindful, ways to be aware, ways to take care of yourself. So viewing weight management or preventing diabetes as not some punishment, but something positive you're doing. That's where we think we're going to get a lot of value, sort of leading a little bit with weight loss, but then bringing a much broader holistic view that pays off, we think, very well for both employees and employers.
Now, do you partner with other wellness companies, or do you partner with other niche companies, like, let's say, financial wellness? Because you actually alluded to that. I mean, if we don't help our employees become financially well or better manage that, it's tough to tell them not to grab that, you know, sausage biscuit in the morning, right? It's hard to do.
Right. Given our new strategy of Beyond the Scale into looking at weight loss as one measure of success, but not the only one, we're looking at a variety of different partnerships, and that's certainly one that's been discussed. When you think about this more broadly, it just opens up a lot of opportunities. So what does membership in Weight Watchers mean and ways to amplify that and extend that in the months and years to come. And obviously, our partnership with Oprah has given us lots of possibilities in this area, in her role as a board member, in her role as an owner of the company, and most importantly, probably as her role as a member of Weight Watchers and sharing her story with folks as it progresses. So it just gives us a lot, a different platform and different opportunities to explore those kind of strategic partnerships.
Gary, it's been great having you on the program. I've got about 30 seconds to a minute to go. I'd like you to leave our audience with any additional things you'd like to leave with or any parting thoughts, takeaways.
I guess my parting thought would be that Weight Watchers in some ways is today what it's always been for over 50 years as the most credible and well-tested and scientifically based program for weight loss. So that's old news, but it's still relevant. I think what's new news, and I'd like people to walk away with, is that we're expanding that perspective, largely based on consumer insights and also based on science. So even how we approach our points formula has adapted to new science and consumer insights, how we view fitness and how we view this broader fulfillment piece. So we're happy to keep evolving based on science and consumer insights. And I think as we evolve, we're continuing to evolve in ways that make sense for the B2C business, but importantly for employers and employees.
That's great. Hey, Gary, if I'm an employer or even others listening to this program or even the follow-up podcast, how do they find out more about the health solutions part of your business? Can they find that on the WeightWatchers.com site or where can they find
that? Yeah, that would be the best place to look. Yeah, just WeightWatchers.com.
Okay.
And also,
Gary, thanks for having – go ahead.
No,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Sorry. No, that's all right. Go ahead.
No, it's been great having you on the program. Really appreciate you spending time. Enjoy your weekend, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
My pleasure. Take care.
Thanks, Gary.
Bye-bye.
Ron, good stuff. I mean, this wellness continues to evolve. I mean, here's a very solid consumer brand that, you know, digging deeper into becoming a really integrated health solution, you know, provider to employers.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it shows our listeners how broad and deep the whole idea of consumerism is and where all this is going to give more choices and options. You know, some of the Weight Watcher type programs and some of his competitors, Jenny Craig and others, have been some of the leaders in having people utilize wearables so that the pedometers, the number of steps you're taking, the calories you're taking in, the calories you're expending and you're exercising. I saw that a lot earlier in several years ago than even some of the more focused wearables that we see in the market today with the Apple Watch or the Fitbit and all that. So I think they've been involved very early on in trying to provide the kind of feedback that would encourage the engagement you were talking about, Gary, with Gary. You know, Gary's a psychologist, and so he's got an expertise in behavioral change and bringing that kind of information expertise along with Weight Watchers into the whole consumerism marketplace. I think it can be a very powerful product and service to get people really engaged in their own health and healthcare.
And I think, you know, I brought up mindfulness to him because, you know, I wanted to see his connection there. And, you know, it's interesting how mindfulness, you know, is advancing pretty rapidly, you know, as part of this overall solution, because he was talking about how they see the fit there and what they're doing and financial wellness, you know, the very important part. I mean, you know, we don't say it tongue in cheek, but it's pretty hard to get somebody to go run 5 miles or eat healthy food if they're stressed out about paying a mortgage. You know, it's
you're gonna reach for that cold beer, that sausage biscuit.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever it is, comfort food, smoking, alcohol, yeah, whatever it is. So you really have to start to get people moving in a positive direction, which is one of the issues Weight Watchers has been doing in a very focused area. But it's really exciting to hear that they're talking about branching out into the broader well-being, into the broader areas of mindfulness, getting people thinking about what they really ought to be doing, getting it in the front of their mind, how certain things impact other decisions that they're going to make down the road, other impacts on their health, on their job, on their ability to deliver, on how many sick days they're going to have to take, how they're going to be able to interact with their community, the family. I mean, all this stuff is really coming together in very leading edge stuff. And again, You know, a lot of this is going to be discussed in more detail at the upcoming forum, so people can hear even more about it.
Yep. And again, to our audience out there, you know, we hope you can join us at forum. You know, go to our website, theihccforum.com. Now we'd like to bring in our next guest in the program, and actually who will be with us at forum in Atlanta, Jeff Poulter, Senior Vice President of Magellan RX Management. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Nice to have you. Are you coming to us from Michigan today?
I'm coming to you from Michigan. It's beautiful weather here today, about 65 degrees. No complaints.
Hey, no sports talk, but are you a Michigan or a Michigan State person? Because your
Michigan.
Host is a Buckeye.
Yeah, we know that.
Well, Jeff, nice to have you.
I hear non-committal.
Yeah, there you go. Nice to have you here with us, and you're going to talk about a really important piece, and as I did allude to in the audience, you and your team will be present with us at Forum coming up in Atlanta soon. We look forward to seeing you there. But, you know, pharmacy benefits is now really kind of exposed probably more to employers than it's ever been, and, you know, transparent pricing is so important. But give us a little background on Magellan RX, and then we'll kind of dive into some of these key talking points, if you would, please.
Sure, absolutely. First of all, thank you so much for having me. And we do look forward to being at the event as well. So Magellan RX is a full-service pharmacy benefit management firm, similar to any of the other PBMs out there, but they have a very different focus in the sense that Magellan RX started as a different company. They started as a behavioral health company. Magellan Health, everyone knows them, been around for 45 years, and they are very heavily into the behavioral health side. So they'll go into states, take on the sickest populations, actually take risk on that population and manage them throughout their whole process. And so as a result of starting sort of on the flip side, if you look at PBMs, all they did was they started as claims processors. And as a result of that, they got pushed into what else can we do around healthcare. With us, it's exactly the opposite. We started really managing the health of patients and then figured if we build a great PBM on this model, we will be able to manage members, not just process claims. And so that's kind of the model of Magellan RX.
Yeah, and I think it's real important today when it comes to pharmacy benefit management that there needs to be that understanding of the consumer. There needs to be that understanding of employers' needs. I mean, you know, PBMs used to be buried inside a health plan, right? I mean,
correct.
No one really
correct.
Paid much attention to it. And now,
right.
and now
right.
you know, you know, there's, you know, you talk about transparency, and I'd like you to talk more about that. Talk more about the importance of transparency. Talk more about, you know, the reception for directly connecting members with pricing tools for pharmacy benefits.
Right. So if you look at the world of healthcare, just as you indicated, there's only one piece of healthcare that is point of sale today, surprisingly enough, in 2016, and that is pharmacy. Right, your medical is not billed when you go to the doctor. Your durable medical equipment is not billed when you go to the doctor. All that stuff is post. The only one that when you get to the you get to pick up something, you're being told you're rejected is pharmacy. And so pharmacy over the years, as you indicated earlier, 5-10 years ago, pharmacy was like dental on a balance sheet. Nobody cared about it much. It was 10% of the healthcare spend, 5%, 11%. Over the years, past 5, 6, 7 years, it has really increased, and now in some organizations it's 25-30%. Now that's not necessarily a bad thing, because as we know, people are living longer, they're living better lives, there's more cures that you could do outside of the hospital. That's great, but if we only depend on that, we're going to end up spending a lot of money for stuff that has no ROI to it. And so what's happened over these years is the member has been brought in as a much stronger partner with the employer on the spend. So the traditional, as you see in your world, we're seeing a lot more of it by us. The days of sort of that flat $10, $15, $20 copay difference between brand and generic is $20 is really moving quickly away. And that's being driven by the market. It's being driven by Obamacare. It's being driven by Medicare, where it's pay for value. There's a lot of components that bring that into the mix. And so what's happening is the member is becoming much smarter early on to understand that they're going to be paying a lot more, and therefore they want to understand the spend a lot better. Pharmacy has always been a black box. Our industry has made sure to keep it a black box because you can do a lot of things when it's a black box and no one can see it. And so what we've done is we've gone out and said, hey, at the end of the day, we have to remember there is a person on the other end of this transaction, a human being, that needs their medication. And they deserve and earn the right by utilizing our services to be able to get the best information as easily as possible. And so what we did was we went down the path to say, what is it out there technology-wise that we can utilize or partner with that can provide members a different experience that adds the tremendous value? And so if you look today in any of the insurance business, right, whether it be your medical or your pharmacy or your dental, how many times would you ever log on to your information? You know, the statistics out there for PBMs is 3 to 5% of people ever even log into their profiles online, and if they do, it's one time. What we did was, and it was funny because our partner was looking for the same solution at the same time. There's a company out of Los Angeles called GoodRx, and GoodRx started in the discount drug card business. They basically went out there and said, we're seeing all these different discount drug cards. We're seeing a bunch of them. Some are good, some are not good. We want to take all these together, aggregate them, and provide the member that if you're filling this script and this zip code, we're going to give you the best possible deal. And so what happened as a result of that was that they started becoming very successful in that, but they started getting calls from human resource departments, from employers saying, you know, I got a member that's on a high deductible health plan, they pay the first $1,000, and they're complaining terribly that they're going out to pick up their prescriptions, they're paying for them through our plan, and then they find out from a friend that Walmart's got it for $4, or this one's giving it away for free, and it's even less than their plan. And so they began to realize that there's a real opportunity here to somehow take the same concept of aggregating data in a very easily usable solution technology and provide it out to the membership. And so we partnered. We started this about a year, close to 2 years ago. It has been enormously successful. Just to give you an idea from utilization standpoint, I indicated earlier it's about 3 to 5% utilization. With us, it's 86% is our average utilization for the clients that we have integrated in GoodRx. And the reason is because it's not a technology. You know, in the healthcare world is a lot like the banking world, right? Our technologies, even if they look slick, they're older. That's not our strength. Our strength is processing claims very efficiently. And so with GoodRx is made up of a couple of ex-Facebook guys. I mean, I think number two and number three employee, Yahoo guy. These guys come in and they're technologists. They're not healthcare people. They're technologists. And so what they've done is the whole model of the GoodRx product, just to give you kind of the 30,000-foot level, is that you don't even have to do anything and we will generate your interest. So what we would like you to do is when you go to the doctor, we'd like you to log into the app and see what the cheapest place is for your prescription. But let's say you didn't do that. Let's say you went to the pharmacy just like you do. Within 24 hours, you're going to automatically get an EOB that's going to tell you, you know, explanation of benefits. It's going to say, hey, Jeff, you filled your claim at XYZ store and you paid. By the way, are you aware that less than a half a mile away, there is another store that has that prescription for $18 less? Times 12, you would save, times the number of drugs you're on, you would save. By the way, you have two refills left. Would you like us to transfer those to the other place? You didn't do anything yet. You just got an email. And now all of a sudden, as opposed to sort of looking at data that, I don't know, I mean, I'm not going to worry about it until I need it, I now have something that tells me that I bought something yesterday that I could have gotten a lot cheaper, and you're going to make it really easy for me not to have to go back and pick up my prescription and find another pharmacy. And so the whole model is that it communicates with you as opposed to you having to communicate with it. And the beauty is it goes on forever. So if you're on a maintenance medication and you're filling it at the big box store and it's the cheapest one and now a store across the street starts competing for it and it's cheaper, the process automatically begins again and you don't have to do anything other than accept and say, yes, I want to transfer. And to be very clear, what we don't want is we don't want people on five prescriptions to go to five stores. So we bulk everything together, and we call it My Shopping, and you could put all your drugs in there, and it'll tell you for these five, this store is the cheapest, even though for maybe two of them they're more expensive, but in aggregate they're not. And so what we have found is the feedback we get from members are just unbelievable, where they're saying every single time they fill a script, they have always gotten the cheapest possible price. And so in this whole world of consumerism, HR departments are in love with this because now they don't have that struggle that they had, which is members are finding out they can get it cheaper even on a discount card.
Well, that's very interesting. Ron?
Yeah, this is very exciting technology and ways to engage the consumer with information at the time that they really need it, so that that learning point that you can get their attention because they're actually using the system.
Correct.
The other uniqueness, it seems to me, that Magellan has, cause for those of us who have been around for a while, is the history related back to Magellan Health as a mental health company. And on the prescription side, it seems to me today I'm hearing more about people who need medications for stress and depression in their lives, for sleep difficulties. Can you talk a little bit about maybe the mental health history and how that might feed into the kinds of services and recommendations for medications so that people can get the right kind of care they need for stress and depression needs, as opposed to going into a primary care physician that doesn't know what they're doing and they wind up getting stress tests and all sorts of care that they really don't need when underlying maybe some medication might be the real issue, or seeing a psychologist.
Sure. So going back to what we said originally, right? So MagellanRx, as you said, MagellanRx started as Magellan Health, and we still have Magellan Health, which is a very large part of our organization. What we've done is, and MagellanRx, we talk a lot about this, is if you look at our world, the PBM world, it's really a volume world, right? How big is your network? How many claims do you process? Because if you process 10 billion claims, you're going to get it a penny cheaper. Everything is volume. MagellanRx has a very different view. Yes, you need to compete in the volume side. You need to compete in pricing. But we believe in value. And the value is exactly what you're talking about here. So when we look at a case, and again, we provide as much or as little. It's very a la carte to the client. You have clients that want all your clinical services wrapped in, and then we bring in a full slew of clinical services to the client, or we have clients that want more processing and a few clinical services. But the whole concept is exactly what you just said. When we look at a client's data, we don't even just look at their pharmacy data. We look at their medical data. We marry that data together. We identify opportunities. So if we have a prospect that comes to us and says, hey, price this file and tell me how much it would have cost if I used you, we'll do that, and we obviously do that. But then we come back and we say, hey, within your data, we found 5 things that we recommend you change. We don't think that you should have X number of these prescriptions, you know, for that amount of quantity on a monthly basis. We come back to them with sort of those clinical things, or when we see something in the medical side that doesn't have prescriptions associated with it, like what you just said, we immediately alert the client to that as well, saying, hey, are you aware that there is this situation? And so in those, we allow clients to enroll, so members can enroll in a program. So, for example, when a member fills a specialty prescription through Magellan Rx, what happens is we don't just fill the prescription. The first thing we do is reach out to the member. Make sure the member knows, and the member gets their own concierge nurse line where they can speak to the same person all the time. And we want to make sure, do you understand the disease state? We provide technology. Every time we send out a specialty medication, you can scan the bag that it comes in. It gives you a movie about what your prescription is, how to use it, an 800 number to contact 24 hours a day for any needs. And then what we do is we want to make sure that we're getting the return on investment. So, for example, and I'm not a pharmacist, so please don't quote me, but if you take Sovaldi, right, Hep C Sovaldi, there's a lot of situations where members will take that Sovaldi. It's a $90,000 drug, $85,000, whatever it is. Take it for their 90 days or 60 days, whatever it turns out to be, and it did not fix the problem. They still have Hep C. And so the doctor will prescribe something else. And nobody is going the step further to say, first of all, I want to monitor the patient, right? So we know that if a member is an alcoholic, or if they're drug use, the Sovaldi will probably not work. And so you've got two issues where one is you're going out and you're having them fill a prescription that you're not going to get a return on investment in. And two is that you're shipping out 90 days worth of a drug that maybe after 2 weeks we're going to find out probably shouldn't be used. And then we take it one step further, and we do what's called, which Magellan has about 20 or 30 nurses that are actually trained in what we call motivational interviewing, which came again from the Magellan Health side. And that drives a lot around adherence or other issues that can affect adherence. So we know there are a lot of organizations out there that will, that, you know, it comes to your 85th day, we'll ship out your medication. What Magellan does is they work out a timeline with the patient, and they'll contact the patient, and they'll get to know the patient and all of their surroundings. So they will identify through motivational interviewing that maybe the spouse is really pissed that this member's sick. They'll get involved with the spouse, and they'll say, you know, just basically flip it and say, hey, here's the great news. If he or she takes the medication, they're going to have a perfectly normal life. And so things, you know, or they'll say, did you take your medication? The patient will be like, yes, and they'll be like, when's the last time you took it? Yesterday. How many pills do you have left? Oh, about 20. Well, you should only have about 6. So you're having a problem. And really just staying engaged with the patient to make sure that not only are you taking the medication, but you're taking the medication the way you should, one, and two, that it is having the effect it should have. And so a lot of that stuff is coming from the Magellan Health side to teach us more on how, when you know, when you go into this, when they go into the state of Florida and they take the sickest population, and they get paid, I don't know, I'm just throwing out a number, $1,000 a month for the pay. They're stuck with that. That patient can cost them $1 million a month if they're not careful, and so they really know how to break down sort of that health component to drive that the pharmacy piece is not only the patient is getting what they need when they need for the right person, but that the results we're getting are the correct results as well.
It, you know, Jeff, this is really good stuff, and we've got about a minute to go. So, and again, I want to remind our audience they can come and learn more from Magellan, you know, at IHC Forum in Atlanta. I want to give you a chance to kind of close it and leave our audience with some good takeaways, and you know, would love to have a pickup conversation sometime in the future about this as well.
Absolutely, that would be great. I would just say that you know, this whole concept around consumerism, for years we've been talking about it. You know, HSA accounts, and it's real now. It's very real, and the member and the patient who is now paying into, as employees, we all pay into a healthcare system, whether we pay a lot or a little, we're paying into it, and we are now expecting a lot in return. And I would just encourage all employers that when it comes to implementing these programs, that you give the tools that members need to be able to make the best decisions. And this is not something, like I said, that's going away. I think this is going to increase. We're seeing at least a 30% increase year over year in our you know, high deductible health plan business and things like that. So I would just say that we would love, you know, and any assistance we can provide, certainly, but the concept of what we're talking about is something that applies to all pieces of health.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And tell our audience, if they're listening to either now, live, or in a future podcast, how they can get in touch with you to learn more.
Sure. So I can be reached at my personal contact information is Jeff Poulter is my name. My email address is japoulter, P-O-L-T-E-R, at MagellanHealth.com. And I would be glad, if it's not something that I personally provide assistance with, I can certainly put them in touch with the correct people.
Yeah. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy your weekend up there, and we will see you in about 2 weeks here in Atlanta.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
Take care. Find another good piece. I mean, just all these elements swirling around consumerism. And I love what Jeff just said. You know, I've actually made a note on that. Consumerism, it's real now. It's true. This isn't it's coming. It's real now, right?
Yeah, that's a good title for the next conference we put on as a theme, right?
Yeah.
It's
that actually real now. Is pretty good.
You know, I really like the idea of, he explained very clearly how new technology is not just processing claims, but is reaching out actively to the consumer, giving them information at the time they need it. If they make a decision and there are alternatives that they didn't even think about or didn't research in advance, they're giving them feedback saying, well, now here's the information that you know, you can use next time you go to the pharmacy, because they're probably going to go next month to get a refill or a few weeks to get another medication. They'll find out information about a cheaper alternative, so they don't have to spend those high deductible dollars on medications that they can find at a lower cost. So I think it's really exciting to see the way technology is developing, the way the emphasis is now much more on the consumer and their needs, not just on the insurance carrier to process claims or just on the employer who's paying all the bills. We're really getting down to a world that's got new aspects of consumerism that I don't think we've ever seen before. So it's very exciting to see what Jeff and Magellan RX are doing in their part of the world to sort of push this whole consumerism movement a step further.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got the pharmacy benefit component. You know, we just talked about the wellness component. We're about to talk about, you know, the CDH component. I think John's got some really interesting things to talk about. You know, and in fact, he's with us right now. I'd like to join. I have a welcome on the program now, John Park, Chief Strategy Officer with Allegiance. John, good morning.
Good morning. This is John.
Hey, John. Good to have you on the program again, and nice to talk to you again. It's been a little while.
Yes, it has.
Yeah. John, give our audience a little backgrounder on Allegis for those that might not know Allegis, which is certainly one of the leaders in this space.
No, absolutely. So Allegis has, by name, is relatively new, however, has been in the marketplace for quite some time, over 20 years, in fact, and really started with the debit card processing that was tied to the early stages of CDH accounts, which was the FSA. Since then, it has transformed and evolved as an organization and really become a complete platform for CDH, incorporating all the different types of accounts and integrating a full suite, a real-time single platform that administers and manages all things CDH, including FSAs, HRAs, and HSAs, integrated together with a record-keeping platform together with a debit card, integrated debit card capability. So there's a significant amount of capabilities that we are developing and innovating around, and it really has to do with promoting and moving the agenda around consumerism forward. And we're going to talk a little bit about that through the research that we've done. But more importantly, you know, we have the scale and the size to really be positioned and enable our clients and our customers to do some unique things. So we serve, I think, about 30 million consumers and process over $9 billion of healthcare funds each year.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know John has been on the very beginning of consumerism back to the Definity days, right, John?
Yeah, it kind of ages me, but yeah, I've been at this for quite a bit of time. I was one of the co-founders of Definity that really kind of pioneered this this space. And you know, in some ways I'm very proud, and in some ways I'm a little bit frustrated at the same time, because although the marketplace has made a lot of improvements and a lot of progress, there's just so much more that we can do. And I see that both as an opportunity and a challenge for all of us as we talk about the improvements to the healthcare system.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. John, you talk about, and I know you want to talk about today, and I think define this with our market, as we turn to more individual responsibility through consumerism, that there becomes a consumerist healthcare moment of truth. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think historically a lot of folks and a lot of people kind of saw the key decision point for an individual in the healthcare system was about picking the right benefit. And as we know, as we've transitioned a lot of the financial responsibility and accountability for healthcare to the individual, that those moments of truth and decision-making expand well beyond just the selection of a benefit. So things like, and I heard this earlier in the interview, picking the right, getting the right most value for the healthcare dollar and selecting a medication through the right channels. Whether it's understanding and making a decision about what procedure or what channel to go through for a specific service. We have more information today as a consumer of healthcare than we ever have before, yet people are still confused and very anxious about making these decisions, and they don't have a lot of confidence. And our research that we'll share in a little bit reflects that. And so we haven't figured out how to make it easy and make it relevant at an individual level to help them make better decisions. And that, to me, is a big missing component. And I think it's also, we're much better than we were, I would say, 10, 15 years ago. Yet there's still a long way to go to really, truly create a consumer in the healthcare space. So when we talk about moments of truth, it expands along the entire life cycle of the healthcare experience as an individual, all the way from plan selection to paying for a service or selecting a service, and a provider. So now we're expanding our thinking around what those moments of truth are and understanding the implications of those decision points at a consumer and individual level.
Yeah, because to your point, I mean, it's pretty daunting for a consumer that's never had to make these decisions before, and it can cause a high degree of friction as well, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, you know, I kind of relate it to certain things. Like in the beginning, when you're first going through this decision-making process, it's very difficult, daunting, and challenging, and can create friction and possibly the wrong decisions as a consumer that you are intending. The system is intending you to make. So, you know, I kind of equate it, you know, once you go through it once, then after that it becomes easier as a consumer. And some of our research, as we look at, you know, year over year, we're getting now some trending data that kind of shows that as you go through that process, it becomes easier. So I kind of reflect back on the first time you made an internet purchase. I do remember my personal experience around this. I put my credit card in, I made the payment, and the first thing I did is I called the website, the webmaster, I think it was, and I said, did that transaction go through? Because I didn't trust that the payment went through or they actually were processing my purchase. But after that, it just becomes second nature. And so you trust the system, you gain more confidence, and it becomes easier. Same thing with healthcare. Some of the things that our research actually shows is that people still don't have a high degree of confidence and still need that human interaction and validation as they become consumers and make some of these decisions. And so one of the things, even with the advancements of technology and the digital channels that are available to individuals, people still want to get that human interaction. And that depends on the various segments, but it applies across the entire continuum, even to the millennials, when it comes to healthcare.
That's great. Ron?
Yeah, John, you've been around for a while as one of the real thought leaders in this whole space, having worked, I guess, I assume, with Tony Miller a lot at Definity Health and developing these whole concepts. As you look forward as sort of the thought leader and futurist that you've shown yourself to be, where do you see some of this going, and how are we going to better impact the consumer, especially in the areas where you say they need not – you know, they need to develop some trust in the system. We've seen that trust develop in other areas. I mean, how many people take a receipt when they go and pump their gas these days and want to be sure that, you know, they get the right bill on their credit card? We don't do that anymore. We have trust in other systems and the banking system. How do we create that trust and that engagement with the consumer in the healthcare space?
So I think that's a great point. And I think the first element to really building that trust is making it easier. One of the things that our research shows is that one of the biggest challenges in the system is understanding and wading through the jargon of healthcare. It's not easy. It's not simple. And we have to help support the individual. And that to me is, I think, the first step in building that trust. I think the second piece of that is then consistency and making sure that they can rely on the services that they're getting, the payments that they're making. Ensuring that all of these programs and all of the things that are available to them, whether it's a financial account or whether it's a program or an incentive or a service that's being provided, is being managed consistently for them as an individual. And then finally, some of the things that I think that we can do as an industry is start pulling together an experience that's actually not fragmented. So if you think about all the folks that are on this call today and talking about weight management programs and disease management programs and the financial and incentives that go along with these wellness programs, making that relevant and simple at an individual level and tying those programs together so that there's relevance and you truly get what we're all looking for, which is true behavior change as a consumer and better health. And ultimately, we believe that those dynamics will drive lower costs for the entire system. And so once you've accomplished that trust, go ahead.
No, that's it. Go ahead, John. Go ahead, finish. I'm sorry.
Well, the last thought I was going to say is I think that's what we're all kind of striving for is right. When we talk about consumerism, it goes beyond just a benefit or making a specific decision. It is truly about incorporating consumerism dynamics into the marketplace so that we get those outcomes. And so that can be applied in so many different ways depending on that individual and what segment they fall under.
Yeah, John, we got about 2 minutes to go, and lots to talk about, and love to have you on again. It's always nice, you know, hearing your thought leadership and, you know, your views and visions on things. Tell us specifically, if you would, in the last couple minutes, what Allegis is doing to help support consumers through these decisions, and maybe what's coming next that you guys are working on.
Yeah, so that's a great question. There's a lot of different avenues, different paths that we're taking, a lot of partnerships we formed in the last 12 months, and we continue to expand that idea of partnering with folks that are innovating in best-in-class programs, and that ranges across the entire spectrum of wellness programs, incentives, retail relationships, as well as health-related health management programs like disease management, condition management. Our thought here is that by tying it together with the financial elements, which we have scaled and we've aggregated through our platforms and through our customers, bringing together all of those elements to really drive true engagement. And when we talk about engagement, it's not just did they log into the portal or did they download the mobile app. It's are you really able to provide information and decision support tools that help the consumer make better decisions? That engagement engine is something that we're working on together with our partners, tying together the financial aspects as well as the healthcare aspects, and really creating an engagement engine that is useful, that is relevant at the right moment of truth. And so we've got some prototypes that we're developing. We'll be rolling out later this year. And I truly believe if you can demonstrate that simplified experience and tie together the fragmentation of that consumer experience in a way that makes sense, that's going to move the needle significantly when we talk about consumerism. So that's where Allegis is focused. We're leveraging our expertise and scale on the financial side and working with our partners to bring in the healthcare components.
And anyone listening here can find that information and access to you and others at Allegis.com, correct?
Yep, that is correct. And welcome the questions and discussion.
John, it's been great having you on the program, as always, and look forward to continuing these discussions with you. Good luck at your partner conference coming up in a couple of weeks, too, correct? You got your partner conference
next week. Yep, next week in
next
San Antonio.
Week already.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have a great event, and love to get you back with our events in the near term. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, John. Take care. Well, Ron and Jonathan, great program today. Good discussion. Mm-hmm. To our listeners out there, we really appreciate you spending time with us today. I want to remind you that should you want to access any of our past podcasts, go to our website, theiacc.com, where you can access all of these, and these will be up. The show will be up by the first of the week.
Should be this afternoon.
This afternoon, maybe.
Yep.
Okay, there you go. And again, if you want to join us at Forum in Atlanta, go to our website, theiaccforum.com. But you can also access our private exchange forum coming up in Baltimore in September,
right,
and IHC Forum West coming up November 8th through 9th in Las Vegas. We look forward to seeing you at one of these events, and we really appreciate you listening to us. And we hope you have a great weekend, and we'll see you next Friday on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.